Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Glad you could join us for our podcast again this week. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their career. And our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're going to be talking with Brahim Zabeli, who is the CEO of Smart Meter. And he has a background in working with large global companies as well as startups. And he has some great insights and thoughts he's going to share with us today. Looking forward to our conversation with Brahim. Brahim, can you give us, first off, a little bit of your career history and a little bit about your story?
Yeah, sure. Be happy to. So in terms of career history, I was fortunate enough early in my career to start with a large world-class organization. At the time, it was called Whitehall Laboratories. It was a division of American Home Products. They have since been folded into the Pfizer Consumer Health Division. One of the things that I've appreciated about that early in my career was is working for a world-class organization gives you training. As a new hire, it also gives you training as you move into management. And so I was fortunate there. And from there, I went to the LifeScan division of Johnson & Johnson at the time, another world-class organization. And so I've been blessed by being able to work for companies like that. And in with those two companies, I was in various sales management, and then ultimately marketing and marketing management roles. More recently, been with a combination of smaller companies, including where I am today as CEO of a startup called Smart Meter, trying to bring a new device into an emerging market.
Great. Well, tell me a little bit about kind of moving from those large environments where you you have a lot of resources to more kind of that lean startup type companies and also kind of the smaller companies. What adjustments do you have to make in order to make that transition?
Yeah, sure. So in many cases, or in all cases, I think one needs, first of all, to be flexible, right? And I think that's generally good for anyone and probably any place in their career or with any organization that they're a part of. They need to have some degree of flexibility. And then the other piece of it is you have to be willing and able to do some of the hands-on stuff, right? Mm-hmm. It's a combination in all cases of being both a leader, but there are situations where in a small company you're doing it all. You're running to Kinko's and getting copies made if necessary. I had a friend of mine once say when he moved into a leadership role in a small company that he was now the chief cook and bottle washer. I mean, he did everything from greet the guests at the front to to doing the dishes afterward. And so I think it's a great it's a function of being flexible and being able to do whatever needs to be done.
Great. So I ask this question of every leader that comes on the podcast: if knowing what you know now, if you're going back to talk to a 22-year-old Brahim, what advice would you give him?
Well, so that 22-year-old, right? So again, and I'm coming at it from my perspective, and I kind of said this already, that 22-year-old, let's say just graduating from school, I do think they would be well served by starting to work for a large company that can provide them the skills, training necessary. I mean, we all know how kids are. You come out of school with this great academic background. Hopefully you've got some great credentials, but the real training takes place in the market. The real training takes place in the real world, very different than the academic world that these kids come from. And so the best place to get that is, in my mind, with large companies that are actually on a nice growth trajectory. Because what it does, if someone is fortunate enough to find an organization like that. Again, it not only provides them the skills as they come in, but it also gives them growth opportunities within the organization. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't happen if you were with a small company necessarily, and it certainly wouldn't happen if you were with a large company that had to retrench for any reason, right? Those growth opportunities, they wouldn't happen. So again, my advice, and I'm sure there are others out there that can differ with it, is get some real world experience by trying to start out with a large, well-respected organization that's growing.
Got it. So looking back at the people that have impacted your career and mentors that maybe have poured into you,
sure.
Tell me a little bit about that and the importance it's been as far as to you and your growth.
So in thinking about it, right? I mean, those people that meant the most in terms of career growth had, and I'm thinking of a couple in particular, right? First of all, they had high expectations. Mm-hmm. They were, quite frankly, they were pretty demanding, but they were also realistic. And they had characteristics that allowed them to help when necessary, right? So they had enough good judgment to be able to discern when there was an issue, when a little help was needed. So in thinking about it, I think it was helpful. It is helpful to work for people that are somewhat demanding, have high expectations, because, you know, quite honestly, I mean, that's how teams win, and that's how one grows. So that combination of things.
Yeah. So is there, as you think back to the first time that you had to put together a team, mm-hmm. you had to hire others and put that team together. What do you wish you would have known when you put the first team together? What advice would you give somebody in that situation?
So for what it's worth, Mark, let's start actually with a different question. What does a new manager do when they come in and have to lead a team? Mm-hmm. In thinking about it, right, very rarely does someone move into a situation where they can decide who their team is. I think most often the situation is you are now chosen to be the leader of this pre-existing team, and you now have to manage them, right? I can only think of maybe there are a few people in sports that, you know, a head coach that can decide, oh, I'm going to bring, you know, half a dozen sure. people with me when I move from this team to that team. I got to tell you, that's pretty unusual. The more usual situation is the one I described, where you come in as a new leader of a small group, and that group has been formed, and they, for all you know, they've been around and working together for a while. So let me start with that, right? So you as the new leader of a team have to pretty quickly, I think, try and discern who's performing, what the interpersonal relationships are with the people in that team. And it's kind of funny. I've always tried to follow a pretty simple model when it comes to stuff like that. So you'll find pretty quickly as the leader of a team, you're gonna find your good performers who also get along with everybody, right? Those are great people. And you may find a person or two on your team who not only doesn't perform very well, but doesn't get along. And that's actually a pretty simple situation too, right? Because you're going to try and move that person out as quickly as possible. Where it gets pretty interesting is if you have a person who is a good performer, but doesn't get along with people, right? And those people exist, right? We've all had to deal with them. And then you as a leader have to decide how you keep group dynamics positive, even with this maybe more difficult to deal with person. Again, good judgment comes in there. And then the last scenario is actually kind of an interesting one and maybe the most dangerous. And that is, what if you have a team member that you have inherited who is not a good performer, but gets along with everybody, mm-hmm. right? Because so there's a couple of scenarios that I've experienced in my career, and you have to be careful, right? If they're not a good performer, but they get along with everybody, or else they're there, you got to be careful as to moving that person out, because you may impact the group dynamics. For whatever reason, that person gets along with everybody, and hey, you know, they're providing some value somehow, right? Or hey, for all you know, that person might be the daughter-in-law of the CEO, right? And so that's how she gets along with everyone. She's pretty politically savvy, and you got to be careful as the new leader. So I think inheriting a team is typically more often the case, and then you as the new leader have to try and discern, you know, the various contributors and to what degree they're contributing, right? Now, your question though regarding building a team. So I've always tried to be pretty simple and straightforward in recruiting candidates and what I look for in candidates and building a team. So the easiest one is the scenario where I just gave you, where if you're moving into a new role and you have had great people working for you in a previous role, well, my goodness, you should try and take them with you if you can, right? So that's an easy one. But when you're just interviewing candidates, looking for the best, I've always kind of thought in three ways, right? And this is not original thinking on my part. I picked this up somewhere along the way. I look for three basic things. Number one, can the candidate do the work? Number two, will they do the work? In other words, are they motivated to do the work? Right. And then number three, how well are they going to fit in? So the first one is just a function of skills, right? I mean, do they have the skills? Do they have the experience? Do they have the know-how to do the job? The second one is, again, a function of motivation. And that one is sometimes a little bit harder to determine. But it's every bit as important, because as we all know, there are some people out there who may not have the skills, but they're extremely motivated, and my goodness, they're going to get the skills, right? Mm-hmm. And then the last, again, that last group is just how well are they going to fit in? Do they have a history of getting along with other people? What do their references have to say about them in terms of their ability to play in the sandbox? That kind of thing. So I've always tried to keep it really simple. Can they do the work? Will they do the work? And how well will they fit in? So that's how I've historically tried to build teams.
So somebody coming in that's inheriting a team that's already mm-hmm. there, and maybe some of the people that are on that team maybe were looked at for that leadership of the team, and now somebody's coming in to take over. How do you get credibility that first, a lot has been talked about that first 90 days, but starting out, what are some things that you've found that have worked to kind of get the team to kind of rally and follow your leadership?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I have any specific insights. I mean, there are some good books written out there about the first 90 days for anyone in a new role. Yep. But I think, generally speaking, you absolutely have to immerse yourself in that role. I mean, you can't be taking vacations. You can't be working short days. I mean, you have to absolutely immerse yourself in that role, so you have a complete understanding on the nature of the work that needs to be done, both long-term and short-term. You have to have a good understanding on who the players are, who your people are, their personalities, their interactions. And you have to have a good understanding on, you know, how your group relates to other groups within the organization. So I would say the simplest answer, and maybe it's overly simplistic, is just complete immersion for those first 90 days in a new role.
Okay. Any books that you would encourage people to read that have had an impact on you and you think any leader should at least be aware of?
Sure. I mean, I kind of believe in the classics. Anything from, there's a Spanish writer from the 14th century called Balthazar Gracian, I think was his name. There's Machiavelli. If you want to get along in an organization, if you want to get things done, you have to work with people. You have to know people, right? I was fortunate enough early in my career that I actually took some classes from a management guru of the 20th century, Peter Drucker. And I remember him saying, you know, all human organizations are ultimately tribal, right? And so you got to think in those terms when you're running a team, when you're managing a group, when you're part of a group. And so a lot of the human relations stuff matters. So, and then of course I would also recommend Drucker as someone to read. Mark McCormick from, his stuff is a little bit dated. He passed away quite a few years ago. That's important reading. Also from the last century, something as pretty basic as Dale Carnegie. His public speaking programs, his human relations programs. This is classic stuff. Now, something much more modern is a book that I've read recently called One Mission. It was written by an Army officer by the name of Chris Fussell. I think I'm pronouncing it right. And he served in Iraq 10, 15 years ago. And he talked about the changes that the U.S. Army had to make to fight the insurgency. And one of the things that we have to recognize in our world, Mark, is that, with some of the new communication tools out there, smartphones and the ability for people to communicate in ways they've never communicated before and as easily as they have, it means that organizations are going to be changing. Management has to change. And, Chris in this book talked about what the U.S. Army had to do to combat the insurgency and took advantage of these tools, just like the insurgents were using these tools. So that, I think, is an important book. And quite honestly, a lot of books haven't been written yet about some of the changes that are profoundly impacting people with these new communication tools that 10, 15 years ago didn't exist. Anyway, that's a long answer to your short question.
Yeah, that's good. So outside of work, what do you like to do to recharge?
Snow skiing. Just came back from a trip to Colorado in the summer, cycling, living where I live. There's some great roads and trails for cycling. Just generally physical exercise. One of the nature of an executive is you spend a lot of time talking, spend a lot of time sitting. I think a fair amount of time needs to be done. Exercise needs to happen. And then ultimately, family, right? Just hanging with family is nothing better in terms of recharging than that in my mind.
Great. Any parting advice that you'd give a new leader?
And not only a new leader, but also any individual contributor as well, probably comes down to just a few words that I think I learned early in my career. And that was do and be seen doing. In other words, just, get it done. But then to some degree, others have to know you're getting it done. We like to think that everyone knows, how great we are, all that we've just accomplished, but that's not necessarily so, right? Everyone's kind of doing their own thing. So to some degree, I think people have to take ownership of making sure that they're good about publicizing their accomplishments. So do and be seen doing is probably parting advice to not only a new leader, but anyone that's trying to make a contribution.
Great. Yeah. Well, thanks, Brahim. This has been a lot of fun and enjoyed our conversation. And as always, it's great to reconnect.
Yeah, it is, Mark. Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.